You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James, and today I'm here with my co-host for a while. I'm thinking it might be a while.
Three episodes strong.
Danny Hawiwi.
Close enough, James. Close enough.
I'm bad at names.
Yes, Mr. Kevin. Yes. All good, man. All good.
Danny Hawaiian Man, that's what I'm going to call him.
I got introduced once as Hawa Mama or something like that. Hawa and I was like, you're clearly not trying and just trying to be funny. I get that. But, you know, when part of your routine is your crazy last name, it all works.
Yeah. How is Hawaii? I mean, there's so
happy
much.
Happy Halloween, everybody! Happy Halloween!
I know that I'm very excited for Halloween. Speaking of that, do you watch scary movies during Halloween, or are you not a scary movie guy during Halloween?
If you consider Hocus Pocus scary, then yeah, baby, all day.
We just watched that last night. That's super funny that you said that. We watched that, and then my wife watches Bewitched like a million times during this time frame. So.
Okay.
I watch Halloween, like scary Halloween movies, so it's weird. Okay. So today, and I'm gonna butcher names. We're gonna butcher names today. I'm just gonna let you know. I think I said it like 8 times, and I'm gonna say it wrong. But today we have a great guest on the show, recommended by both Danny and David Studebaker. Said he was super funny, like one of their good friends, great at comedy. And now I'm like super excited because I've heard such good things. So please welcome. It's gonna go so bad here. But back, right?
You want to know what's funny for everyone who's like watching this? That was, he said it like 8 times before, and this was by far the worst one. But he said it just fine every time, other than you just psyched yourself out. But no,
I told you, that's what I do. I'm bad at names.
I'm nervous.
Bob back. Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
I get nervous. That's the thing is, I'm not good with names. I do it all the time. You could ask anybody.
Bobek, can you confirm this is why you went by a stage name for a minute?
Oh, did you go by a stage name?
So I did for different reasons, though. I kind of dipped my foot into comedy right around the time that I started becoming a teacher.
Okay.
And, you know, like you're nervous about like what's going to come to the surface and... so I can't remember. I think at first I went by Bobby Shaw. I think I called myself Bobby Shaw. And then I turned it into Bobak Shaw, like S-H-A-H. If you see on my Zoom, it just, you know, has my full name there. But yeah, it was just Bobak Shaw is the last name that I think I used on the stage. So
now we keep an identity.
But did you use a different name because you were worried like your students would find some of your material online and then like use it against you in class or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. Well, you also have to understand when your name is Bobak Sharvar, pretty easy to find anything you've ever done in your entire life online.
You know, I can't relate, Bobak.
it's not like Michael Smith or something like that. So,
I know. Yeah. I always like, I should have used my first name and my middle name as like my stage name, but I was like, I'm too lazy to do that. So it would have been just James Daniel. There would have been a million James Daniels all like over the world. It would have been perfectly fine, you know?
Oh, good. Good name. Good, strong name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like a drunkard, like an Irish drunkard.
Yes, it does.
So how did you get into stand-up? Like, when did you start? How did you get started? Where did you start? Kind of give us your origin story.
So it's actually really funny. I was, when Danny hit out, you know, asked me about the show, I checked out like the podcast. And, you know, the first one that I gravitated towards was, I think, Danny, maybe the first episode that you were on. And it was funny, like listening to you, because it was like really similar to like what my experience was like. He talked a little bit in that episode about like, we're both, like we grew up together. We've known each other since we were
shout out Cupertino Middle School, right?
I think even before middle school, because you were like on my brother's baseball team. So we both grew up in Sunnyvale, and I had always just been interested in comedy. It was just like, since I was a little kid, I really got a kick out of making people laugh, and I felt like it was the only thing that I like felt like I could do well and get noticed for. So I don't imagine it's that different from a lot of other people, but Yeah, there was a place, Rooster Teeth Feathers, down the street from where we lived, and you always heard about it. It was the only comedy club I had ever known about growing up, and I always thought, like, man, that would be so cool to do. And I literally, like, I created a Google Doc a long time ago where I would, like, write down, like, things that I thought were worthy, like, that would be funny in stand-up. And I just kept adding to it, like, all the time. This is, like, years before I ever did it. But I was way too afraid to try. And I don't know if, Danny, you felt the same way, but, like, I think I had a huge fear of, like, I really want to do this thing, but, like, I never wanted to, like... So, like, in education, we have a name for this. It's, like, called protecting your self-worth. It's, like, the same, like, concept as, like, a student who is probably very capable of doing well in school, but is so afraid of trying and then failing that they, like, they don't want to find out that they're going to fail, so they don't even try it.
Oh, yeah.
They'd rather just imagine that they could do it. I was kind of that way with comedy. Like, I had, in my mind for so long, thought, like, I want to do this so badly that if I actually went out and tried it and didn't do well, I just couldn't live with myself, you know? But eventually, like, you know, I think on one of the new, like, the open mic nights opened up, or was on my birthday, and I just thought, the stars are kind of aligning, and let's go for it, and I did it, and yeah, it was fun. It was, and then, yeah.
Well, I'm glad there's a name for that. I wish somebody would have told me that growing up, because I was the, like, classic underachiever type person, where I was like, well, if I don't try, then no one will expect anything, and then I can just kind of fly under the radar. But yeah, it only hurts you in the end. Like, really, I probably could have been light years ahead, but it hurts you in the end, because I even had a chance to go to, like, one of those, like, I think they're called, like, gifted and talented schools or whatever.
Yeah.
And I purposely bombed the test twice so I wouldn't leave my friends, because I was like, well, if they can't go, I shouldn't be able to go, and I don't want to, you know, whatever. So yeah,
it's a weird psychological thing. So.
Yeah. So it's
where to not be a standout, right? Nobody wants to be at the standout, because, you know, to Bobak's point, that it's like the spotlight is on, mm-hmm. and then if the spotlight is on and you fail, everybody's like, look at this guy, yeah. Icarus over here.
Yeah.
See,
no matter how many shows I did, and it was just always so, like, it was just, that's so hard. That's one of the things, like, when I would do shows, and I remember you said this on the show, Janie, yourself, like, you don't really consider yourself a stand-up comedian. I'm, like, not a stand-up comedian, but I'm someone who's, like, done comedy, and I was lucky enough to do it, like, a variety of shows, different venues. But to me, the big difference between, like, myself and someone like, you know, Studebaker, or I think the second show I ever did, you guys know Kabir Singh?
The name sounds familiar, but I don't know.
So he was on America's Got Talent, and he made, like, the semifinal, like, a month ago or something.
Wow.
But, like, my second ever show I did with him, and these were people that I just feel like there's something in them. There's no fear of not doing really well, you know? And I don't feel that I don't think I could have possibly had that kind of mentality to be so consistently willing to put myself out there, you know?
Yeah. When's the last time you performed stand-up?
It's been a while. I think, when was it? It was like, I want to say it was like at least 3 or 4 years ago, if even, because it was like right around when I got married, my life just started getting busy. You know, went to a master's program, I changed jobs, so I was at a new district. I got a little daughter now, and, you know, so it's been hard, but I literally still have a little thing on my phone that I keep every time I think of a joke, like, I add a new.
Get rid of that itch, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I can't wait to do it again. I don't know when it's going to be, but I feel like I have all this material that I would love to just try it out. So
I love that. That shows that that's really your calling. Like, if you're already making notes and keeping track of stuff, like, before you ever get on stage, that's definitely one of those things where your soul is calling out to be there. And yeah, and I get it, because when I get on stage, I get nervous. Like, I've walked, got like to the stage where I was about to like get on stage and thought, like, I'm just gonna quit right now and just turn around and leave. Like, at that point, like, it's a weird thing. And I have a friend who's friends with the lead singer of The Killers, and I didn't know this, but he throws up every time before every single show. He gets like so nervous and freaked out that he gets sick before every single show. So I know that's a real thing that does happen. Even the successful people, right? That band's super successful. Those guys are super successful.
Yeah. I thought I remember hearing that Mitch Hedberg had like terrible stage fright.
I think that's why he wore the glasses and stuff. Isn't that?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's
right. I didn't know if that was actually true, but and even like, I think I was listening to a podcast when Norm Macdonald even said like early on, he was utterly terrified of being on stage. And it's just so funny to me that people, and I include myself in this, like you could be so drawn to something that scares the absolute like crap out of you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, go ahead, Denny.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, I know, you know, when I'm standing behind the curtain and, you know, oh, give it up for, you know, James, yay. And then the host is like, all right. And, you know, coming up next to the stage, great local comic. And in my head, I still have that feeling. However many times I do, we're like, oh my God, he's talking about me. He's gonna say my name and I'm just gonna have to walk out there. And I know what I'm gonna say, but, oh, like, you know, you still get those crazy butterflies. And then you just kind of spew out a set. And when you're done, you're like, yo, that was everything I needed to fill me back up, you know, but it never really goes away. I mean, that's the adrenaline of it, you know?
Yeah. I did a show, a paid show, kind of, I want to say it was a couple months ago, and it was filmed too. So they paid me, they filmed it. It was in front of a live audience. It was like really cool in a really cool place in LA. And I watched like three other comedians go before me and they did great. And I was like, oh, this is I'm going to do so terrible now. And I literally like got to the door because you had to like walk upstairs, get there and wait around this little corner. And then the host would call you out and then you get up there. I remember walking up there, grabbing the mic and I felt like I stood there for 5 minutes and said nothing, even though it was probably 5 seconds. And it was the most terrified I've ever been. And then everything, I just looked at my set list and started doing my set and just, it went so good. And I walked away, I walked off. And the host was like, that was amazing. You did such a great job. And I was like, I did. And like, I couldn't remember. It was such a weird feeling. And the sad part is somehow it got deleted off my phone. Like I remember hitting stop and save. It got deleted. I cried on my way home because I was so sad. Because everyone was like, it's so good. And I was like, oh my gosh, what happened?
Oh no.
Well, you also know that like Jerry Seinfeld has that joke about people being fearful of talking in front of strangers, that like more people would rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy. Now, what kind of teacher are you? What do you teach?
You mean like what subject do I teach or what's my like style as a teacher?
No. Like what? Yeah, subject and maybe grade or what, or like age grade or range.
So I teach high school and it could change every year. When you're in high school, you have like a single subject credential and, you know, it's depending on if I'm teaching ninth. Anyway, I teach ninth and 10th grade mainly.
And what subjects do you normally teach?
English. I mean, it's English, but for freshmen, it's like the typical freshman English course that at my school, every single freshman takes it. And then I teach an English support course for students who are English learners. And then I teach a world literature honors course for all the 10th graders who are trying as hard to get those A's as possible.
So the other course, the one for English learners, that's like an ESL, like they're learning English because that's now their second language.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's cool. You know, you get like, I get a very, because I'll go from one period teaching support to teaching like honors, and it's like a tale of two cities. So it's really crazy, yeah. But it's good, man. It's fun.
So you have like a master's in English then? Is that what it is?
I have. I have a bachelor's in English, but I ended up going to get my master's for education administration.
Wow. That's
so awesome. It's the kind of, you know, people get their that's what you got to get if you want to be like an administrator, like a vice principal or principal or something like that. So.
A principal. That's all. I had a principal who would say, "I'm your principal," and I was
that's like, "Very creepy."
No, you're not, buddy. You were not, sir. Right? Yeah.
Spelling device, though. You can always remember how you spell principal, the person, versus a principal. Like, so it's not the worst thing in the world, depending on delivery, I guess. Like anything, comedy.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's the truth. Do you now, do you ever work on any bits or tell jokes in any of your classes or try to make them laugh? That
kind of thing? I've definitely done it before. Actually, now that I'm remembering, when I used to teach in Eastside San Jose, and when I was there, when I first got my job there, I was taking over for a teacher who was taking a sabbatical, and she decided to come back like my second year. And so they're like, oh, we don't really have a job for you. But they liked me enough where they were like, well, what if we create a class for you to teach? And it was between creative writing and speech. And I thought, let's do speech. And I was the only speech teacher in that whole district. And I was able to like totally create my own curriculum. I had a whole stand-up comedy unit. And it was like super fun. Like the kid, it was really cool because it was like one of the first times that I was able to see for myself, like stand-up comedy is really like something that, like, there's a science to it, you know? And there's like even though I had done stand-up, like I had to look up, like, how do you teach someone to be funny? And, you know, I had students who were like scared to death and were like, I'm not funny at all. But they worked so hard at it that like when they gave their sets, like the whole class thought they were hilarious, you know? So like when we did that to kind of make them feel a little less scared, I like, you know, I came up with my own bit. And I would practice it in front of them. And I feel like there were a couple times where like, especially when I was doing both teaching and stand-up at the same time, where like I'd have a show coming up and I'd have this like bit that I thought up of. And like I'd find an excuse to bring it up in the middle of class and I'd just note if like kids thought it was funny or not. Cause they could be a tough crowd.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
James and I talked about this though, like different people are good at different things, you know, and that's so cool for the kids to learn that too. Because some people want to be, you know, in front of the camera, quote unquote. Some people want to be, quote unquote, behind the camera in the writer's room. So there may be some people where their delivery is some kind of way, but they're like, yo, I can craft the hell out of a joke. And that's so cool for kids at such a formative age to actually understand that. Like, to your point, from an education standpoint, like that's so funny that you got to just shoehorn your passion into your career.
Yeah. Well, and I ended up, there was a kid who I thought was hilarious. I thought he was so funny. And like, I told him, I was like, dude, if like every once in a while I have a student who is just like really funny. And I just kind of like nudge him like, dude, if you want, like you could do an open mic. Cause I think I remember Danny at Rooster Tea, and I don't know if this is, James, you might know better than we do, but like if it's common at comedy clubs, but there were like, I remember like doing open mics there sometimes, and there was like a kid in high school doing like the open mic. He couldn't, it was funny because he couldn't like hang out where like with other comedians where they're drinking, but he was able to go up on the stage. So is that common?
That happens at clubs a lot. Yeah, you'll be like 18, like you can't be in certain areas, but you can do your set, or you have to stay in a certain thing. It happens
exactly. And so I like kept that in the back of my mind, and I told like a few kids like, hey, if you're really interested, like, you know, you could, if that's something that you want to try out. So one of my students actually ended up performing at an open mic at Rooster Tea right after he graduated. It was like a small crowd. It was like, you know, only like a few people there, but it was just cool. It was cool to see someone up there who like was a pupil of mine, you know. It was fun.
That's so funny. I started doing that same thing because the teen center out here in LA near where I live wanted speech for kids, and they're like approached me about it because someone had seen me do stand-up. And I said, I don't do speech, but I can teach stand-up, which is like speech. They have to learn how to craft things. They have to get in front of the mic, you know, all this stuff. So I've been running 3 times a year a stand-up comedy class for teens. So bravo to you.
Really?
Yeah.
I wish you had done that before I had to teach that unit. I would have just
what you came up with. I was going to ask if I could borrow what you came up with. So that's.
I actually think I might. They're like old PowerPoints, but I could send you over whatever.
Yeah, that'd be so awesome. Because I'm always trying to get it better and better. Because even though you practice stand-up, if you watch somebody or you talk to somebody or something like that, you always pick up something new. So I always tell them, I said, look, I'm not the master of this. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm not Jerry Seinfeld. I don't know every in and out of comedy, but I'll teach you everything I know, and I'm going to dig and learn and grow as much as I can to help you. So if you have a question of something you want to learn, like this semester, I had a couple repeat students, But they wanted to do sketches. They wanted to write sketches, SNL sketches, Monty Python style sketches, all that stuff. I was like, okay, let's do that. So that's what we did. They wanted to do roasting too. So we wrote roast. We did roast battle in class, and I let them roast me too. It was awesome. So we did roast battle and we did sketches. Yeah, it was great. They actually turn in their sketch tomorrow. Their last sketch tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
So it's really cool.
So is that something that you like carefully work with them on, or do you have like no idea what their sketch is going to be like?
Oh no, we do in class one together, like a sketch with everybody. Oh. So everybody inputs ideas, we flesh it out. I talk to them about how you do it, what we're doing. Then we write it together, and then I'm like, this is the outcome. This is what it looks like. So now you have a template to take and make a sketch of your own. And they'll pitch me ideas. They're like, oh, I have an idea for this thing, and I'm like, oh, that's great. That's a great premise. Now think of XYZ and how you can twist that, and because some of the kids really know Monty Python like stuff for some reason, and some of the kids know SNL, and so it's like a weird mix of when they come up, what ideas they come up with depending on what they've watched.
That's funny.
That's kind of crazy. What kid? I mean, good for them, I guess. But I guess what kind of parents do they have? If a young kid is like getting into Monty Python. Like, who's?
They're like 12. They're like 12 or 13.
That's eclectic, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. There's like every once in a while, there's like that one kid who's like, oh, you're cool. Yeah. Like I have a student and she is like early on. It's really funny. She'd kind of like wear these like suits to class, and it just was like very different. And she said that like early on enrolled in honors, we would have this like presentation where they have to like talk about something that represents how they view the world. And I can't remember what she did, but she like focused her presentation on how like her comedy idols are like Jim Belushi and like Bill Hader. And I was like, oh man, this kid seems cool. And it's like, to imagine someone who's now a teenager, who's 15 years old, to say like Jim Belushi is my comedy icon. It's just like kind of crazy to think of.
Well, that's funny that you say that. Those kids, those same kids that like Monty Python, pitched me like, oh, what if could I do a rewrite Blues Brothers sketch? And I was like, a Blues Brothers sketch? Are you kidding me? And
they're like, my student, that same student was talking about how she loves Blues Brothers.
I was like, how do you know that? You're like, this is like two or three decades away from where you are. Like, I was like, whatever. It's cool. And that's the thing is, that's one thing about comedy is it transcends time. And then also, you can find commonality with people that you might not otherwise find commonality with. And as a teacher, I'm guessing that that's a good way to connect with students too, is through humor and through comedy. Yeah, has it ever backfired on you? Like, have you ever tried to be funny and then like it totally backfired?
Oh, I'm sure it's happened plenty of times. But I always try to make those moments as little memorable as possible. Move on and don't let it linger in their brains. But
James, you mean comedians tell jokes that people don't think are funny? What are you getting at?
I don't know if we want to go there right now.
I will say I've found that I am nowhere near as funny a teacher as I feel I used to be. And I don't mean that in a very like sad way, but like it's really funny to like see yourself get older. And like, I don't know how much of it is like, I don't actually try to be as funny anymore as much. And how much of it is like, this is a completely different generation of people. They have completely different interests. Like even the mediums upon which they rely to like interact with the world are completely like different than what we had.
Yeah.
How much does that like shape your style of humor? Like if you look at like a meme, like that kids come up with now, it's just like, I'll look at something and be like, I have no idea like what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy.
I have to stay a little steeped in meme culture because a lot of the comedy writing and stuff I do, sometimes it'll be corporate stuff. And they're like, hey, we want to do these kind of meme things. And I'm like, okay. So I have to like know what memes are. Like I just,
when you know, they're really cool.
Well, I just pitched somebody. Somebody a meme like a TikTok version of the, this is fine meme. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like the dog with the house.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like this is fine, you know? Yeah. So I pitched that as somebody. And then I also just pitched because it's like for a home, what does he do? Home investing, home flipping, something like that. And I pitched also, and I don't know how well this will go over by the way on TikTok, but I pitched a parody of Ludacris's Area Codes. instead of the bad word, I have homes in different area codes.
That's clever.
But But I don't know. I don't know how it will go over, right? Because that song, if you played it, like if I played it in front of my kids, they would be like, "Oh my gosh, that's the most sexist, you know, like rude, evil possible," right? Whereas, like when I was a kid, we're singing it around all the time, like you know, it's like, okay,
so. Wonderful. Say my area code.
No, they said 702. That's where I lived at the time. So I was, and I would yell that out louder than any other area code. I don't know.
Where is 702? I feel like
that's Las Vegas. That's Las Vegas. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
You're from Las Vegas?
I moved there when I was like 15. I grew up in Texas and I moved to Vegas when I was like 15. And then I moved to San Diego when I was 18. And then back to Vegas and then now to LA. So all over the
place. Wow.
So I've lived in a lot of area codes.
You've had homes.
You literally have had homes.
I've had homes in different area codes. That is true. Yeah. There you go. So, is there a piece of literature that you find yourself drawn to because of the humor in it, as opposed to, like, you know, we teachers, like in English, have to teach, like, you know, Shakespeare or whatever, but you're not drawn to Shakespeare because it's funny, but Shakespeare because it teaches a lesson or there's something else there that's important. Yeah. In that. Is there some?
Good question. Like, do you mean like among the books that I teach my students, or do you mean just generally, like,
let's go for both. I'm down for both. I like to learn stuff like this. So.
I would say, you know, I'm not as read as a lot of like traditional English teachers you'll find, but I would say among the books that I've read that I thought, you know what I would say? I think of the books that were traditionally part of the classroom, and I've never actually taught this book, but I remember reading it. The one that I remember thinking was funniest was Catcher in the Rye. I don't know if you guys read that. But I can't even remember what it was, but there was something about how like honest the novel was and how like true it spoke to, I don't know, like the teenage experience and like that cynicism. I just felt like it was very raw and very like uncomfortable. And I thought that was really funny. Other than that, the only other book that I could think of off the top of my head that I just genuinely remember like thinking was funny was High Fidelity. But that's not a book that I've ever taught. I think there was a movie with John Cusack about that novel. I think the writer is Nick Hornby or something.
Yeah,
Jack. But I can't remember what made that one funny too. I don't know. To me, like whenever I read something or even like just watching any comedy at all, and I think this is the way that I framed it for my students when I taught stand-up comedy or as a unit, is like what people find is funny. It's not like, you know, people, when you guys meet people who know that you do stand-up, they go, tell me a joke. It's like, it's not like that. You know, like I'm not saying knock, knock, like who's there up there. But it's more like what, like to me, a joke is like you are sharing your unique perspective on something that hasn't been expressed that way before, you know? And I think when anything that I read that gives me a very unique and funny way of looking at something that I hadn't thought of before, even if it's not intended to be funny, to me, that's like what comedy is. So I don't know. I felt like those books were pretty good with that.
That's a good point. Go ahead, Danny.
I was just gonna say, isn't a joke almost like definitionally like taking expectation and subverting it, obviously in a humorous way? But I mean, I think that is kind of a large part to your point, Bobak, about what makes things funny. It's, you know, it's a unique story or a unique perspective, but it's some way of shifting an expectation where it's like, I never thought of it that way.
Exactly. Like, I think
Tim Gaffigan, it's that same kind of humor. It's just like,
no, that's the perfect way to put it. Like, to me, the reaction of like, oh, I never thought of it that way, that's like the essence of comedy, you know? And I brought up Mitch Hedberg earlier. He was a really good resource when I was teaching my students, because it was like, look, you don't necessarily have to craft these thematic bits that all tie together. You could literally just make like these pithy observations about life. Like, he had a joke that my students thought was the funniest thing ever. I can't remember how he said it or how he delivered it, but it was something like, rice is really good if you're hungry and you want a lot of something.
a billion of one thing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, who thinks of rice like that?
That's the funniest. Well, you know what's funny about the J.D. Salinger book, The Catcher in the Rye, is when I was in high school, I wanted to be an FBI profiler. Like, I wanted to go, like, track down serial killers. And little known fact, that is the most common book found among serial killers.
I've heard that.
So it's one of those weird things where I was like, they almost always find a copy of that book within that. So
creepy. Bobak, anything you want to tell us?
That's what I was thinking.
I will say I read it one time. It was my senior year of high school.
He's like, FBI, don't knock on my door.
And I got no good ideas.
I don't think it like gives them ideas, but I think it explained what you were talking about, where you that angst and that teenage emotion and that rawness and realness that's not usually in a book that you don't really find. You always kind of feel you're in a fictional world in a lot of books, but in that book, there's a very true to life feeling in it. So,
You're also making me very nervous about myself because I was very drawn to that book when I was in high school. It's saying a lot about me right now. So.
No.
But I let go.
Hey, you know what? My favorite book in high school was Salem's Lot. We like read it, and I actually thought it was funnier than it was supposed to be. And I remember just like thinking, like, "Oh, I'd like to live in a town where there's vampires. That'd be cool," you know. But then everyone's like, "What?" And then Twilight came out, and everybody was like, "Yeah, I'd love to live near vampires." I'm like "Oh, now I'm the weirdo, huh? Okay." Right.
I think everybody went through a phase where like they liked the things they weren't, quote unquote, supposed to like. I mean, I remember loving the what's his name, Rupert Selby, I think, but Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I mean, A, because it's a gripping, like, great story, but also B, just because it's like, oh, it's so depressing, and like, isn't it pretty crazy that like I love this really depressing thing? Like, what would that say about me? Like, I'm super deep. But it's like, you know, I think everybody kind of has that phase where they're like, yeah, I like it because of the angst. Like, yeah. All right. You're also 12, but whatever, you know.
Yeah. No, it's probably everybody who liked Clerks and Mallrats and all that stuff when they were growing up. At least I did. I like
Kevin Smith's wheelhouse, man.
Yeah, that was my jam back in the day. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Is there any place like, do you have stand up online that people could watch if they wanted to and stuff?
You know, I that's a good question. Yeah, I have actually a really funny story. I have a funny story to share. Danny, do you remember a couple of years ago? I had to text you. So, okay, let me share this story.
Totally.
This last one. I had random videos just kind of lingering around online. I had like a Facebook like profile for my like stand-up comedy persona, I guess, and I would post videos there for once in a while. So I tried when I first got my teaching job to like privatize the videos and make people could access them easily. Because some of the material is like, you know, you don't want kids who you're teaching hearing it. And I pretty much got taken care of all of it. And then I got a new job at a new high school, new district, which means I was not tenured. And in that year, one of my students, like she just came to class one day and she like was staring at me like she saw a ghost. And I was like, what's going on? And she's like, I saw you online. I was like, what? And I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, I saw your stand-up comedy. And I had no, like, you have to understand, I have no idea how this person could possibly, like, my school that I used to work at was very far away. Like, just, I can't imagine she could have gotten a hold of it from some other student. But she ended up, like, being willing to, like, show me the video, and she got it out. And the first thing I was looking for, because I looked at all my, like, accounts, was like, what account do I have? Because I checked them all, and I don't see that, like, there's any video available. And I saw that the title, the account title was like Danny Halloweeny or something. And I was like, oh. And then, and of course he didn't mean this, like, he didn't mean to like screw over my teaching career. But I ended up texting Danny like in my effort. I was like, dude, kid. And dude, he was so responsive. Do you remember this? I like
texting. I do. Yes. Now that you mention it, I do.
And right away he like privatized it. And the student was like, oh, I can't see the video anymore. I was like, too bad. I don't think there's anything available. Luckily now I have tenure, so I wouldn't be as worried, but I'm sorry. I wish I did, but I don't.
No, it's okay. I know a bunch of teachers who have done the same thing, who have like do stand up and then privatize and hide stuff, or use a stage name so that it's not as easy to find, but then somehow it always comes out, though. It almost always comes out that you've done stand.
James, I'll see if I can send you the link directly. Okay.
you know, see if we can, because that's private. Yeah. Oh, only you and people you choose can see the video. I'm looking at it right now. Bob, I got the improv. September 2015.
You're already super funny as a person, like, and very personable, like, just from this conversation. So I can only imagine how good your stand-up is. And I what's going to have happened, though, I'm going to be very sad that this is the only thing I'll get to see of you and not see something else. I'm like, hey, you should probably pick that up again. You know, like,
I'm not kidding. Like, I legitimately want to do it again. Like, to me, this is not the end of it. I would love, like, because I really think I'm at a point now where I used to be so afraid of bombing, I couldn't care less anymore. Like,
yeah.
And that's, it feels very liberating and it makes me want to go out and try. So,
Totally should. I mean, that's the thing is, stand-up is the scariest yet most refreshing thing you could possibly do. Yeah. The only thing that could probably maybe say might be similar would be like skydiving, right? Where it's just like that thrill for that short amount of time that pushes you to your limit where you're like, I could die here, and not a real death on stage, but like you feel like you could die in that moment. But when you leave, when you're done with it, you're like, that was so awesome. I can't believe I did that, you know?
Didn't die, but I killed. Oh.
Nice.
Thank you. James, I got to share a super quick story for Bobek and tell me if you remember this, because, you know, I mentioned this obviously, but I have to obviously tell you to your face and thank you for being kind of the nudge to get me on stage in the first place, because it definitely was you. And I don't want this to come off as in the wrong way of saying like, oh, well, he can do it and so can I. I don't mean that as in because he's not funny, but because I know where he came from and I know, you know, his roots, so to speak. And James, you mentioned earlier about like, yeah, your comedy gets formed like by your peers at a young age. Bobek, do you remember it was either seventh or eighth grade when we had Miss Russo?
Eighth grade.
Beautiful, strong black woman. And she never wanted to hear it from Bobek because he would always try to be funny in her class.
Were you in that class?
Bobek, of course I was.
She would call me that, wouldn't she?
Yeah.
Bucky, yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, I always just remember cracking up in that class and like with you and like, you know, and again, just as we grew up and you know, became like better friends and stuff. But you know, I've mentioned it on the pod, but since you're on it, I have to thank you, you know, for getting me up on there. And again, making me laugh in Miss Rousseau's class. Shout out Miss Rousseau. If you taught us at Cupertino Middle, it would have been 99 or 2000. So if you're listening to this podcast, what the hell? But also, thank you as well. But yeah, man, I mean, it's so great that it's like full circle that we can come back as like fathers of girls that have our lives in this different place, but this love that's still there. Like, I still take showers and like recite routines in my head and like hear the crowd's laughter while I'm shampooing. And I'm like, yeah, that was a good set.
Well, actually, sorry. I know, James, you weren't trying to end this thing, but I'm just getting all these other ideas.
No, you're okay. You're okay.
I met my wife at a show. So I did a show, and it was at the Punchline with Sammy Obed.
Sammy Obed, yeah.
I was talking about him as well, yeah.
I love Sammy. Okay.
Yeah, he was the headliner that night. And it was, I mean, it was a very memorable night. I was very lucky. I always tell my wife, you came to the right show if you were going to meet and fall in love with me, because that was one of my better ones. So
That's so cool. Yeah. I didn't start stand up till well after I was married. So like, and my wife was also the reason why I did stand up. So she pushed me to do it.
Awesome.
You should do it. She's like, you should do it. You're funny. And I don't know if you guys had this, but growing up, I would have people like, oh, you should be a comedian. You should be a comedian. Not thinking that was a real job. Like, I was like, oh, I got to be famous, and then someone will let me get on the stage and say stupid stuff in front of other people. Okay, cool.
I'll be Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah, I wish. That's my mecca every year, is going to see Jerry Seinfeld in Vegas. I go every year, once a year, when he goes to Vegas. I haven't gone in 2 years, obviously, because of the pandemic, but I go and watch because I feel like it's the master class in comedy is Jerry Seinfeld, like, doing stand-up, you know.
Yeah, he's like,
deal with that pandemic, man.
He's one of those guys where it's like, even if he's not like your style of humor, it's just like, this guy has.
He has it.
It's just like, it's, you cannot deny how great he is at his craft. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know people are like, I don't really like him. He's kind of hacky. And I'm like, you realize that he's not hacky. Everyone copied his style, yeah. and they're hacky. Yeah. He started it. Like, he did everything first, and then other people were like, oh, airplane food, what's the deal with airplane food? Like, it was like...
I know, he was so good that he, like, created it these very... You know what I mean? Like the typically overused stand-up comedian prototypical joke
yeah.
is just, like...
It's a like,
he's responsible for that, you know? So, that's funny.
It's funny with this newer stuff, because you can tell, he just... doesn't care anymore. And I don't mean that he doesn't put effort into it, but he's like, I'm Jerry Seinfeld, man. Like, yeah. I'm going to tell my jokes and you're going to laugh. And if yeah. not, what the hell's, what's the deal with you?
Yeah.
Like, you know,
like, what's the deal with this guy in the front yeah. row? You're like, oh, okay.
I forgot where I heard this. I don't know if it was like Conan O'Brien or I don't know, but they said the funniest thing where they're like, what if Jerry Seinfeld had dementia? You wouldn't be able to tell because he'd be sitting there and be like, what's the deal with this sandwich? And he'd be like, ah, Jerry. Be like, no, really, what's the deal with this sandwich? I don't know what it is. Like that's, I'm pretty, as I say, I'm
going to call it bread.
Like a cone bit. Yeah. But I always think about that and crack up.
That's I'm never not going to think of that now. I'm going to like, yeah. think, I'm going to like see somebody who has like dementia or Alzheimer's and I'm going to think of that. And I'm going to laugh and then I'm going to be in trouble somewhere.
Yeah. Sorry happen. About that.
That's no, all right. It's so good. Well, thank you again for being on. Danny, that link didn't work for me, so you'll have to send it to me a different way. I don't know why it didn't work. But
figure it out.
All right, we'll figure it out. Thank you again. Is there anything you want to plug? Like, do you have anything that you want to plug?
If you got kids looking to get taught in Los Altos area, send them to my classroom. other than that, nothing.
If you got kids and they need to be taught, I'll teach them.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I
do want to say I appreciate when Danny told me about this, I just thought it would be fun like to just, you know, talk about comedy again. It's been a long time and
so
it's nice seeing you too, Danny. It's been a while, but thank you, James. Appreciate
no, thank
it.
You. I'm grateful, man. I feel like, also, I feel like I made a friend today. Like, I don't know if you feel that way, but I feel like I made a friend, so.
I do.
I hope it's not one-sided. That's going to be weird.
No. Just think of me as your principal.
Oh, he brought it back. He brought it back. Bravo, sir.
It now ended.
but hey, if there's another time, I would love to see Studebaker, because I haven't seen that in a long time, so that'd be fun. So
I'm trying. Okay, yeah. when we can schedule, we'll come back and we'll do sure. all four of us. That would be I know. Danny, is there anything you want to plug?
I mean, same stuff as always. Disney Tonight Show podcast that we do, the unofficial Disney Tonight Show podcast. Obviously, Clean Comedy Podcast here. Check us out on YouTube. If you're looking for a plug, if you're looking for an organization to support, that's a nonprofit, Okaizu Foundation does great work. Check them out. okaizu.org.
What do they do?
Kind of a life plug. They help families affected by childhood cancer. So I'm a camp counselor over there, but they also do a lot of work with families, you know, kids themselves, siblings, whatever it may be. Again, just great work. They recently lost their campsite when the campfire roared through Northern California. So donations are always, nice to see.
Question.
Dan,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you've been doing that for a while now, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. So I was like 18. I don't have to worry about having my my comedy stuff, even though I'm dealing with kids, because we have camp names up there. So I can still... You know, every now and again, you like a camper will spot you, you know, and you'll get like a 17-year-old that requests to like message you or follow you on Instagram. And you're like, talk to you when you're 18 and you're a counselor. Sorry. But yeah, I've been doing it for a very long time.
Now, when you say campsite, is it like campsite, like?
Literally a huge campsite.
Like Friday the 13th type style, like
exactly that, complete with
killers. Not with a killer, but like
yes, huge lodge, cabins across just a huge space, huge grass field, man-made lake. It is kind of weird that it got taken out by a fire, because it's like you have your memories of it, but you know that when you go back it's not going to be that. But I assume that the stars will shine just as bright. I assume that the love will all still be there. So I feel like I should throw in life plugs as well as, you know, comedy, Spotify, and YouTube plugs. So again, okaizu.org, check them out. They're doing really great work.
That's so cool. Well, thank you so much. Thank you both. Please check out Clean Comedy Podcast. Don't forget, if you're listening to this, go to YouTube, like, subscribe. I see a lot of people watching it, but you're not subscribed. So please subscribe. We need more subscribers. I don't know what the deal is. What's the deal with you nuts?
What's the deal?
Thank you again. Thank you so much. Thank you, Danny. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a good one. Bye.